Good morning and welcome to the Bunker Daily with me, Andrew Harrison. It is a beautiful August morning, i.e. probably raining wherever you are. And here to start the week for us is Alex Andreo. Good morning, Alex Andreo. How are you? Is it raining where you are?
It is. It's absolutely miserable.
Great British summer. So we are starting on rather a grim note. The fires on Evia and elsewhere in Greece are providing a vivid and alarming backdrop to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report, which comes out today. The report will warn of imminent and dire risk to the global climate system. Scientists are warning that the extreme weather events of recent years may well become the norm, and that this is the last chance to make a difference before we exceed the 1.5 degree limit agreed at the Paris conference. Firstly, Alex, what are you hearing from Greek friends and family? These pictures are horrific, and, you know, my own friends in Athens have been coming out with really heartbreaking stories.
I mean, it's dreadful. It's a miracle there haven't been more casualties, and one must be thankful for that. I have friends on the island of Evia who are saying that it's now basically quite difficult to breathe if you're outside, so they're inside with their doors and the windows locked and sort of wet towels. Covering the cracks because the air is just full of ash. The fires are mercifully heading north on the island, which is a much less inhabited area. In Athens, there are fires in several places around Athens. The government is claiming that all the fronts are under control. People are having a little bit of difficulty believing that. The government in general has come in for quite a lot of flack because it's been slow to respond, and there seems to have been very little planning for an event that is sadly increasingly an annual fire season. And we're seeing the annual fire season begin in California again. So, floods in Europe and China, heat waves in Siberia and Canada, and the southern part of the northern hemisphere seems to be on fire.
Yeah. And it's hard for lay people like us to comment usefully on the science of the IPCC report, which will be announced in full today.
I don't think it's hard. I think it's very easy, actually, because the science is very, very straightforward and has been in agreement for a very, very long time. You know, we're getting the IPCC report today, and it promises to make grim reading. But if you read the IPCC report eight-ish years ago, I think it was 2013, the last one, it warns that the 2020s are basically the last chance we're going to have to do anything about this. Otherwise, the global temperature rise will get away from us. And so, you know, 8 years later, they're saying, well, it's basically as we said, and worse, because they now expect that temperature rise to come a decade early than they thought. I mean, in many ways, the sort of global climate community could not have hoped for a better PR framework for this report, if that makes sense, because disastrous as what is going on is, I think it creates a situation where people's ears are open to this stuff, and they are receptive to the idea that this really is an emergency and they really need to act.
Yeah. Britain's hosting COP26 in November, of course. COP26 Minister Alok Sharma said of the report, "This is going to be the starkest warning yet that human behaviour is alarmingly accelerating global warming. And this is why COP26 has to be the moment we get this right. We can't afford to wait 2, 5, 10 years. This is the moment." Are you seeing any kind of evidence of actual leadership from the UK government? Is it deviating from its usual announce and then do nothing policy?
I think the fact that Alok Sharma has been travelling around the world can be taken in one of two ways. It could be seen as a level of hypocrisy, or it could be seen as a sign that the government is taking things very seriously. My own sense, and, you know, I'm not basing this particularly on anything, is that the government is making climate part of its general trade mission. And I think that rather detracts from the message. And there's also simultaneously sort of murmurings in the Tory party. So a new backbench grouping has been formed.
Oh, not another ERG, CRG.
Oh, yes.
God, gee, how many RGs do you need?
Oh, yes. Yes. So Craig McKinley, who is, I think, the MP for Thanet, so he's chairing a new backbench group, which, and I quote from what he said to The Telegraph, aims to challenge the consensus over the speed at which carbon emissions should be cut. Yes.
Well, so, I mean, that's a slight movement from challenging the idea that climate change is happening at all. I suppose there is that. But yeah, I mean,
Seems everyone's got the memo. Except the same dunderheads in the backbenches of the Conservative Party. The problem is that they are disproportionately powerful. They remain disproportionately powerful. Not only that, but the party was packed with them to get Brexit done. So the sensible people who would have been allies to the government in this very difficult period where we're looking at climate measures, which will cost money and will require sacrifice from everyone, including from government, and will need to be sold. So the people who would have been allies of the government in this have been eradicated from the party, and the party has been stuffed to the rafters with cranks instead. And this will come back to bite this government.
Well, I think, listeners, keep your ear out for the Global Warming Policy Forum, which we will be having a look at in coming editions, the latest Tufton Street after AstroTurf organisation. But, I mean, when we are seeing pushback from Boris Johnson's real bosses, The Telegraph, at the weekend, their lead story was, Johnson's green agenda has been plunged into chaos amid fears that costs of reaching net zero could cripple working class families in newly won Tory seats. Well, red wall seats are the ones that get flooded. Red wall seats are the ones that take the pounding on this.
Yeah.
You know, is there a political feature in simple, denialism and branding this as yet more experts ruining your right to go on a holiday wherever you like and not have to leg your roof?
So I think the interesting question is, why does the Telegraph give a toss about Northern working families? They never have in the past.
Yeah.
And so I think it's quite revealing to think of it in these terms. Climate measures for cutting net emissions will have a cost attached to them. You combine that with a complete refusal to tax progressively, and you have a problem. So it's not a problem if we had a government that would be willing to tax those who can afford it in order to pay for this stuff. But if you combine it with a government that is caught in a pincer movement between its donors who are bankrolling it, saying you can't raise taxes, and the fact that they need to introduce these measures that do have a cost attached to them, although in the long term, actually they're win-win. Mm. But in the short term, there's a cost attached. And you end up with a situation where suddenly the Telegraph is, waving the flag for mining communities in the north. It's disingenuous. Mm. What the Telegraph is doing is saying, don't do this, because the only way we see this going is that you're going to have to end up taxing the rich more. That's what will happen.
Yeah, because that line about reaching net zero could cripple working class families in newly won. Well, you could always not tax them. You could always tax people in the Conservative shires. Oh dear, they already are starting to hate Boris Johnson. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. The Telegraph never cared about working class families unless it's a stick that they can beat the government with. So the IPC reports every 8 years or so, and the big change since the last one is this rise of authoritarian populism as a world force. Climate denial is one of the articles of faith there. Trump's gone, but this populism is still a vast force in the world. Is it going to be harder to make progress on this now that the the anti-science bloc of, you know, vaccine deniers, climate deniers, lockdown opponents, general anti-experts has kind of coalesced into a single group. I mean, that is the extra edition of Oh God, What Now last week, Dorian and Ian referring to it as WuAnon.
I don't think it's easy, and I think COVID actually provides an example of why it's not easy. There are certain things for which it is difficult to divert attention because they just happen and they're undeniable. And in this environment, like I said, with heat waves in Siberia and fires in California and floods in the bit in between, it's really quite difficult to say, oh no, it's not man-made, oh no, we don't need to do anything about it, it's cyclical, it happens all the time. So all this stuff, it tends to crash into reality, the reality of what people are actually watching going on in the news. And so I think that makes it difficult to make those sorts of arguments with broad appeal. That means that populists may come to view climate change as actually quite a big political threat. So we'll see. My sense is that this thing is so unstoppable and will become so increasingly obvious that anyone standing there saying it isn't happening will just look like an idiot in very, very short order. Well, they already do.
Let's look at coronavirus. The seven-day average of cases, having dipped in early August, is now rising again slowly to almost 24,000 a day. Deaths are around the mid-early 70s. Quarantine-free travel to France is back. Are we any closer, Alex, to knowing whether the virus is diminishing to acceptable levels?
Well, I think it is diminishing. Whether it is diminishing to acceptable levels, I don't think we'll know for a very long time. I don't think we'll know that until schools go back, actually, because that will be the next big thing that means a circulation of the virus pools that already exist. I mean, we had Christina Pargel on Oh God, What Now last week, and one of my takeaways, which I think is an incredibly useful thing to repeat, is that there is endemic and there is endemic. Levels of endemicity matter. So if you end up plateauing at a level of 100 cases a week, it's a very different situation from ending up plateauing at a level of 100,000 new cases a week. Because every time you have a flare-up, the measures you will need to take to suppress it will be that much bigger. And so in my view, there was an extra 50 yards to be ran and the government lost its nerve and didn't run them. There was an opportunity to really push numbers down. There was an opportunity to really push out the message of vaccinating not only 17-year-olds, but 12 to 17-year-olds, as many, many countries in the world are doing, including the United States of America, who have vaccinated up to 6 million children in that age range. So we're in a situation where it is again beginning to slip away from the government. There's now seven at the last count, EU countries whose vaccination program has surpassed the UK's. Mm. And considering how far ahead the UK was, even a month and a half, 2 months ago, that is not something that will be a happy reading for number 10. Mm. So, who knows these things? Everything affects it. You know, the fact that we've had a lot of rain recently will affect it because it will mean more people huddle inside pubs rather than stand outside in the sunshine. The fact that schools are out will affect it. The fact that there's been sort of quite a lot of spectacle on TV with the Olympics will affect it because it's the sort of thing people tend to watch at home rather than going to a pub to watch it. So, I mean, I don't know. There are 1,000 moving parts. It's incredibly positive that cases are falling. But until we return to a situation where you know, millions of kids are going to school, mixing with each other, and then going back to their home, we won't know whether we have successfully suppressed this.
One of the acid tests is, of course, running large events and whether there will or will not be vaccine passports at them. The Premier League starts again on Saturday. Chelsea fans, at least, will have to show proof of vaccination. There's talk of players having to prove vaccination before being allowed to play. Where are we on the vaccine passport debate? Because it seems to have gone, obviously, Parliament is not sitting. It seems to have gone quiet, but there's still talk of vaccine passports by the end of September, possibly sports venues and elsewhere. There's going to be a Commons vote almost immediately when the Commons returns on September the 6th, with dozens of Tory MPs saying they'll oppose it. Where are we at on vaccine passports?
Nowhere. I mean, I hate to give credit to Dominic Cummings, but one of the things that he has described about number 10, since the moment he described it, I cannot get it out of my head. And that's the sort of shopping trolley with a faulty wheel that just veers madly one way for a time until, you know, something shifts the wheel in the opposite direction and it starts to veer madly the complete opposite way. And that's what we've seen with COVID passports. That's what we've seen with, you know, so many policies so far. It is, in many ways, the premiership beginning, the people going to matches are a small element of it. The people congregating in pubs to watch the games are a larger element of it. And no one is talking about requiring proof of vaccination for them to do that.
Boris Johnson refused to self-isolate after a member of his staff tested positive for COVID during a trip to Scotland. And this went almost unremarked. 8 weeks ago, this would have been a massive kickoff. Are we now past COVID shaming? Should Neil Ferguson and Matt Hancock get a refund?
No, it's just, it's August, isn't it? Yeah. It's purely a mechanic function of the fact that all the political correspondents are away, all the big news editors are away.
Not the podcast, Alex, we're still here.
We are still here. We'll keep banging the drum.
Because
and
we can't afford
flag.
To go on holiday.
But I have to tell you, you know, the mechanics of it, that's what they are. You know, when everyone who would normally be prodding these things is on holiday, and the people with whom you'd be prodding these things are on holiday as well, it becomes very, very difficult to create traction around a political story. There has been some delicious gossip about reshufflings in the last couple of days, which I think is worth sharing with the listeners. So the latest rumours are that Michael Gove is in line to take over the Home Office from Priti Patel, that people are very, very unhappy about the way she has handled the sort of asylum, the channel crossing situation. We've ended up with, you know, loads of people just sleeping on mats in offices. And there's a lot of people at number 10 who think this is a PR disaster waiting to happen. So apparently Gove is on manoeuvres. The second rumour, although this is a remote because many think it would be politically very, very difficult, is that Johnson is planning to get rid of Rishi Sunak from number 11. And the person being lined up for his position is Lord Helpers, Liz Truss.
You're going to say Lord, somebody or other. No, and yet Liz Truss is in the frame of it, which is just, what would you do? Where would you go? What could you say? It would be a new low in new lows.
Yeah, but... Like, as I've said before, we are in for an administration of lows. And the positive thing about those lows being record lows and being hit in very publicly is that at least it turns public opinion against them. And the polls have shifted further against Johnson in the last week. He's now at a record low of popularity with his party members, not just around the country, which will be very, very tricky for him because people are openly saying that if he decides to either get rid of or demote Sunak, that Sunak, first of all, would not accept a demotion. He would go to the backbenches and it would trigger a sort of leadership election, maybe not in the next month, maybe in 6 months, but it would certainly, you know, get the situation moving.
Yeah. Well, there's talk of shoving Sunak into health secretary, which is a demotion in any, both a demotion and a nightmare job right now.
He wouldn't accept that.
Yeah, of course not.
He wouldn't accept that. He'd go to the backbenches and begin to sort of shoot, snipe from there, yeah. Which is a really dangerous situation for Johnson. And because despite his many, many, many failures, his political antennae with regard to inner party stuff has remained relatively accurate, I can't see him doing that.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking about this in some detail on the panel show tomorrow, and I shall be getting the risky Sunak headline ready to go. a couple more things before we wrap up. Summertime staple for when there's no news. GCSE and A-level results in England, Wales and Northern Ireland are coming out. National fours and fives and highs in Scotland.
Don't say it. Are you going to say grade inflation?
I was going to say, look out for pictures of beautiful young people jumping in the air, waving papers in the air on the front of the paper, on the front of the Telegraph, because that's what you always get.
Yes.
But we will get grade inflation debate. In fact, you know, there is absolutely no talk at all about a plan for recovery in education after the disastrous 2 years we've just had. People are about to get their results based on assessment because of, you know, the cancellation of exams and so forth. And what we're getting instead is right-wing outriders saying, we send too many kids the university anyway.
Yeah.
So that's what we're getting.
I mean, there is an argument to that. There is an argument that you can't create big bumps in the curve of graduates, basically, because it creates an oversupply further down the line. But this goes back to the very issue we were discussing in the extra bit of our panel show last week, which is that when you commodify education, when you make education a glorified training course, a route to a particular job at the end of it, then you end up with these sorts of arguments saying, oh, we can't end up with too many educated people, which is, at its basic analysis, one of the most idiotic things you could say about a country. To say, oh, we're ending up with too many well-educated people. We're investing too much in our future, yeah. Are we? The moment you begin to view education as a thing which creates, you know, better informed, more rounded, wiser individuals, and the moment you begin to educate people with that in mind, you end up outside of those arguments, and the notion of grade inflation becomes the nonsense that it is.
That's all well and good, Alex, but was it Bridgen saying this is the reason we haven't got any, we haven't got enough HGV drivers because we're pushing people through university? Think about it.
The reason we don't have enough HGV drivers is because we mounted a huge campaign for 6 years to send them back home.
Oh, no. Why did we do that? That was a terrible idea. Yeah. Anyway, before we wrap up, let's have a little bit of Labour. Finally, in the Labour Party, local branches are lobbying to get conference to adopt a rule that would enable members to get the final say over disciplinary action taken against MPs. Do they have any MPs in mind, I wonder? Yes, it's about readmitting Corbyn to the party. Is this remotely workable, Alex? I mean, can you imagine members having a say on disciplinary action for, oh, I don't know, sexual harassment, I don't know, you know, misuse of party funds? That would be great, wouldn't it? Let's all have a big vote on this.
Yeah, no, it's a ridiculous motion to put forward, which tells me it's probably going to happen and go through because that's the form recently. My sense is that the left of the party is overselling the amount of trouble they can cause. This is, in many ways, Starmer's first real conference. And I think there will be, the vast majority of party members will row in behind him. My sense is that he will have an okay conference rather than an amazing one. There will be some attempts to cause trouble, but I think they will be small and fizzle out. Because, like I said, I think the majority of the party will want to give him the chance of this first conference, because the constant accusation being leveled at him is that he hasn't set out his vision. And so to begin to cause ructions on the first opportunity he has had to set out his vision will not go down well with most of the people in the party. So, you know, I mean, if I were on the Corbynite wing of the party, this would be the time when I'd be saying to my colleagues, give him rope to hang himself. You know, it is, as we know from the way the centrist element of the party failed because they challenged Corbyn too early. You know, this stuff matters strategically. Whether you go after Starmer this conference or next year's conference matters strategically. And if there's anyone with any sense in that segment of the party, they will be making that argument and winning it.
Well, it's going to be a fun run-up to a fun conference. Between now and then, the results of the Unite election will be declared as well. And yep, the sort of mutterings, Gerard Coyne might actually win it. And that would really change the power base and the direction of what's happening with Labour. But that's all fun stuff to look forward to. Alex, thanks for getting up early to start your week with us.
My pleasure.
And listeners, thanks for listening. Remember, you can keep us doing our valuable work if you back us on Patreon, the crowdfunding platform. You'll get the show early without adverts. You'll also get admission to the live Zoom of our live show on Tuesday night, The Bunker versus Oh God, What Now? The Bunker is definitely going to win. Search Patreon Bunker Podcast to find out more. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Oh God, What Now is going to win?
No, it isn't.
The Bunker Daily was produced and presented by Andrew Harrison. The assistant producers were Jacob Archibald and Yelena Sofronovich, and the Bunker theme tune is by Kenny Dickinson. Audio production was from me, Robin Lieber, and The Bunker is a Podmasters production.